Hi, listeners. This is a different way to start a always on the Smallville podcast, I know, but in light of the tragedy on the set of Rust that happened this past week and its eerie parallels to one of the plot points in the episode we're going to be talking about in this podcast, I felt it appropriate to address the matter as we had recorded this conversation before this incident. Over the course of the conversation here, we do mention the incident on the set of The Crow with Brandon Lee. Even listening to us talk about that back now is especially eerie considering the events on the set of Rust. But if you're unfamiliar, it's a Alec Baldwin film where he is an actor and a producer. And he was given a firearm that had a live round inside, and a shot went off, and cinematographer Helena Hutchins was killed, and assistant director Joel Sousa was injured. And this is a tragedy, straight up. There was a lot of miscommunication, a lot of drama going on that set. More and more information has continued to come out in just the past few days, and I'm sure more will come out after this recording and into the future. So this story is far from over, but yeah, it's just a tragedy, straight up. There are prop guns, but there are also guns used as props, and that was a key factor in the incident that occurred on the set of Rust. It turns out there were live rounds in this gun. Alec Baldwin was given a gun by a handler. He was told it was a cold gun, and as an actor, you have to trust your crew. That's an essential part of any role. There is a chain of custody and several layers and levels of quality control that are put into place on sets when firearms are involved, and those all broke down on the set of Rust and led to the tragedy. So, as I said, I just felt it would appropriate to acknowledge this tragedy, thoughts, prayers, positive energy to Helena Hutchins' family, and a speedy recovery for Joel Sousa. And here's hope that this incident will not be in vain and precautions will be put into place that prevent something like this from happening again. Again, the incident with Brandon Lee that was almost 20 years ago now, we thought that would have been the last time this happened. And of course, that was the go-to incident. And now we have a new one and it's tragic. And hopefully this won't happen again. We have the technology and processes in place where these sorts of things just don't need to happen. So sorry to start everything on a sour note, but I felt this was the best time to address it instead of awkwardly inserting my commentary into the middle of an already flowing fun conversation. So I hope, as always, the podcast can be a nice escape for us all, and you guys will enjoy the rest of the show.
Hey, this is Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and you're listening to Always Hold On to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Home to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show, that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this week by Mr. Lance Laster from Always Hold On to Arrow. What's up, Lance?
What up?
What up? I asked you. How are you? It's okay, Lance and I don't talk a lot, so it's always awkward when we talk. Yeah. And also, one of our level 33.1 patrons, Mr. Joy Deanberg. What's up, Joy?
Hey, how's it going?
Welcome to the podcast proper.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So people might have heard your voice if they listen to 33.1s. I hope you guys do. We always have some fun conversations over there. But this being your first episode of the podcast proper, tell us about how you found Smallville, became a fan, and kind of some of the highlights of your Smallville fandom.
In terms of Superman, you know, I've always, as long as I can remember, always have been a fan. I had a VHS of Nick at Night recordings of the old George Reeves show that I watched over and over.
Nick at Night, right? Didn't we all do that? Nick at Night, George Reeves? Yeah.
I did Nick and Knife for lots of things.
Commercials included in the VHS tape. It was fantastic. And then, you know, of course, you know, Christopher Reeve movies, you know, I had a nice box set, you know, of those as well that I just, you know, that's pretty much all I watched growing up. I always like reminding you, Zach, I'm about 10 years younger than you. I was born in 94. I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's actually 10 years or not.
That is 7 years.
Seven. Yeah. We'll round up to 10.
It's a Smallville, dude.
So, you know, when I'm in high school, I'm flipping around, you know, looking to watch something. I found some reruns of Smallville, loved it, and, you know, just kind of, you know, saw the name, figured it has to be Superman related, and went bought all the DVDs. And actually, you know, season 7 right here, this is probably where I started watching. I kind of watched both simultaneously until I caught up. I was watching what was on live and watching the DVD. So this is about... right where I jumped in.
What a time to jump in. So season 7, right? That's your first live taste of the show. Did it feel like the show you were watching? Did it feel different? How did you feel getting into it? Yeah.
You know, it was just so the complete contrast of it's a secret from everybody except the parents, and then there's no parents and everybody knows the secrets. So that was a big contrast for jumping in, but you kind of fill in the gaps as you go on, you know, what, all right, something probably happened here, you know, that like him and Lex are best friends when I'm watching on the DVDs and not so much here, but they did have a friendly interaction in this episode. So
that's true. It's always interesting. Like it's like post, well, really like early season 5 Mortal, where they actually exchange blows for the first time. Right. After that, it was always like, all right, you can be around, but we don't like each other. But sometimes we're going to work together. And you're going to tell me a Bible story about the senator, who's my dad's best friend. And I'm just going to sit here. And that to me, of all the interactions, I always go back to that one. Like, that's the most inappropriate. Like, oh, have a seat. You read the Bible? Let me tell you a story. Like, here it works. And like other episodes, it works. Yeah. And whenever you could find excuses to get those guys together still, you know. Yeah. Because that's the heart of the show.
I think, you know, Clark and Lex jumping in cold to any episode, it's so hard to know where they're at half the time because, you know, sometimes they're, you know, like in this episode, you know, Clark will walk right in and it seems okay. So it is hard jumping in cold when you don't have context.
Yeah. Cause you're like, what did, was he allowed in this time? You know, it's like what happened to the days of you, barging into my home, giving me sage advice were over. I don't even know when he said that. He could have said that many times. I think it was like late. It must have been like late season 6, maybe even early season 6, because that's like when the turn was. But see, this season, they try to redeem Lex for a while, or at least maybe, right? What do you guys think about that? Because season 6 was like his real turn, as we determined.
Yeah, and you know, I made mention of that in my notes here for a specific point in this episode. It's ironic, you know, what Lex says to Lionel in this episode, considering what happens later in the season, spoilers. So, you know, going with your take there of like, they try to redeem him. I also think that's ironic considering what we know happens.
And it seems to, I mean, and she's not in this episode specifically, but you know, he's really trying to get that second chance with Kara and trying to, you know, show Clark the friendship they could have had, because you know he knows there's something going on with the two of them at bare minimum, so he's just trying to, it just mirrors the first season so much with the all of their interactions, and you can definitely tell he's just trying to have that second chance with a Kent.
It's like poetry, it rhymes.
Your favorite quote.
It's the best quote ever. So but anyway, so yeah, we're talking about Action, right? Which is a brilliant title, because they're making a movie. People call Action on set. Check.
Yes.
Action Comics. Check. Action Comics and Detective Comics. Joey, let me ask you a question. You know what DC Comics stands for?
I'm pretty sure it is Detective Comics.
That's right. Detective Comics Comics. So that is ATM machine, QRC code, Detective Comics Comics. So anyway, I love throwing that out there. But Action Comics also exists. Superman's debut in 1938, which, of course, War Angel, right, is back for this episode. When is the last time there's any Warrior Angel talk on this show?
I think it's Ryan.
I mean, you might be right.
Yeah.
Just,
it's been a while.
It's been a while. Also on Smallville, Stained. I can't even think of any reason there would be any Warrior Angel stuff since the Ryan episodes.
That's really when he stopped believing in heroes, you know?
Yeah, I stopped picking up a comic and we stopped being friends. Now, when was that? Like, but we'll get into it.
Yeah, I know, right?
So thinking back, I'm like, season 7, there's some good episodes in here. There's Apocalypse, Descent, Fracture. And then I'm like, this is in that list. Not to bury the lead. Or not. I
yeah,
know.
No. Action is great.
This was a revelation to me because it just got lost in this fog and this haze of like season 7 of like Kara's not here, so you don't have that baggage going on, right? There's everyone's already back from the dead already, so there's no have that going on. So this to me, this is a true standout of early season 7.
Oh yeah. And like you, my memory of season 7 is not as good as some other seasons. And when I started watching this episode, I was like, oh yeah, this episode. And as more things happen, I was like, oh yeah, this happened and that happened. So I'm excited to talk about it.
I can finally remember this one. I never specifically remember where this falls, you know, because this very well could have been early Smallville from the hazy memories too. It feels a lot like early Smallville.
In some ways, yeah.
It really is one of my favorites.
Now, we'll talk this through as we talk about the episode, but there's a lot of meta in this episode, right?
Absolutely.
Commenting on like the fandom, the internet, message boards, right?
The industry itself.
Yeah. So in Smallville, the official companion season 7 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold, Carolyn Dries, who's the writer of this episode, went on to write the Smallville scene on Crisis on Infinite Earths and is a showrunner and producer on Batwoman. Quote, "It was funny, the fan reaction. Half of them were insulted and half of them were impressed. Those are exactly who our fans are. They're so serious about the show that it's hard to step away and be like, oh, that's me. But we love them for it. It's this funny relationship we have with our fans." I get that. I think this episode walks a fine line of like being self-aware about where the show is and its relationship with the greater Superman mythology and the fans, and also justifying why Clark Kent is still just hanging out on the farm living with Lana. And I think it walks that line very well, I think. But I can see how some people might be like feel targeted.
Yeah.
By this episode.
Well, they were called out and they didn't like it. That's what it
some is. Fans aren't too enthusiastic about this anyway. But I this is a real clever concept and I like it. And it's refreshing. It felt like someone had an idea. And they're like, what if they did this? And it takes the small mythology of Warrior Angel and plugs it in, which is always great. Because whenever they can lean into the own mythology that they built already, that's great. This story could only exist in this form in Smallville. And that's what I think is special, too.
Yeah, I agree.
It is definitely just a real kind of scary comment on, you know, what fandoms can be. You know, there's plenty of places where people have mature discussions, where people are upset. You know, Zach, you weren't happy with Luke Skywalker, but, you know, you didn't go and hijack the set in any way. I mean, The Last Jedi is kind of a perfect example, too. The abuse that many of those actors took on social media. I mean, it's really reflective.
This is exactly what I thought of, too, the Star Wars sequels.
Yeah. I think they were thinking specifically about Star Wars fandom as a whole. I think that's one of the more toxic ones out there at the moment.
Yeah, but we wouldn't know anything about that in the DC Comics world. So, let's get into it. Action.
Warrior Angel. Internet blogs?
It turns out that not all the fans are enthusiastic about the film's interpretation. The movie stays true to the mythology in all ways but one. In the comics, Warrior Angel's girlfriend dies.
And in the movie, she doesn't. Blogs, message boards, fan forums, these are all pretty extreme. How are we supposed to narrow this down to the one psycho who's willing to kill?
There's one poster, Davilicus Rebel, who's becoming more and more aggressive.
When will Davenport learn our hero lives in solitude? Her blood will unleash the truth?
Action is the fifth episode of Smallville's seventh season. It aired on October 25th, 2007, was written by Carolyn Dries and directed by Marzi Almas. So the episode starts out, and you're like, he's doing it! He's flying! I guess he's wearing gloves now, but that's fine.
And a mask.
And then like, oh no, it's not Clark. It's Warrior Angel. But you know, they have this kind of like hero kind of, they never made like a Warrior Angel theme, but it's like generic hero, like bombastic music, and it works really well. And I like the camera work is really cool here, because like you start on this fist, this point of view, and you kind of slip 360 around, you see it's an actor flying, and it's Warrior Angel, and they're filming on the Kent farm, which I guess, first of all, why are they filming it here? Like Clark, like Chloe and Clark talk about it for a second, and Clark's like, yeah, I mean, like, I didn't know they were going to bring half of Hollywood. I'm like, I can only assume it's to help with the never-ending financial trouble of the Kent farm, but why he agreed to have Hollywood?
Yeah, that's the reason, right? Like, it, like for the in-universe reason and the obvious reason why Clark agreed to let them shoot the movie there is because that Kent farm constantly needs saving, and that Hollywood money will definitely help them from having to sell the back 40 or whatever the hell it is they have to do to keep the farm safe, right? Like, this is a Warrior Angel movie, so they're probably banking on it breaking the bank. So there you go.
Not to be too critical on their choice there, Man of Steel hadn't happened yet, but so I'm from the Chicagoland area, and a small town, Plano, Illinois, was selected as Smallville in Man of Steel and Dawn of Justice. I have family who live there. It was very fun seeing their hometown get destroyed multiple times. But they the Kent farm in Man of Steel, Dawn of Justice, they built in the middle of nowhere, tore it down, rebuilt it for Dawn of Justice.
Wow.
Come on.
Yeah, like, yeah. They
you
did
knew
not.
There were sequels coming.
So in terms of finding a guy who needs some money to let them have film at their farm for a few minutes, which I'm pretty sure the Smallville farm is an actual place that currently exists.
It is. See, again, that's so meta because that's a real farm that they film on their exteriors at.
Mm-hmm.
The Man of Steel one, a friend of mine, actually, we're like, all right, we know it's, you know, 20 minutes from our college. We're just going to drive there. And we drove out there and there was nobody there. And we got out of the car, and instantly two security guards are coming out of the building.
Of course.
It's, cause, and, you know, of course, you know, two guys wearing Superman t-shirts, they probably knew who we were and wanted to get us
like,
out of
there. Another one. Uh-huh. You were number 85 and 86 of that day. People trying to get on the set, right?
Yeah. So that's just my fun story about that. And it's interesting that, yeah, there's two different ways to do it. It's build it from scratch twice, maybe three times for Justice League. Or just use a place that exists.
The opposite of that is for Batman 89. They built these amazing sets for the original Batman film in Pinewood Studios in England. And they're like, look, this is going to be a franchise. We're going to leave these up. We're going to come back. We're going to film so many movies here, right? And so then when they go to make Batman Returns, like Tim Burton's like, I'm only going to do it if we do it in L.A. And they're like, well, we can't do Batman without Tim Burton, so we better do whatever he wants. So then they just, that's why Batman Returns looks totally different and much smaller, because they're in these giant sound stages. They were big sound stages, but they were clearly sound stages. The same four rooftops you see throughout that movie. And it's like, they had, in the rare event, they actually had the foresight to not destroy the sets, and they didn't even use them. To have been a kid in the 80s to sneak on those sets and run around.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, because that's a whole nother world. It's not like The Dark Knight where I'm like, yeah, I walked around Chicago, I'm in Gotham City. You know, it's like, you know, it's a whole nother world. But anyway, that is so cool this seemed like somebody had like a lightning bolt of an idea for this episode, and I think it's all starting to work pretty well here. Now, Chloe shows up because she and Jimmy just broke up in the last episode. Another reason this episode is great, Snow Jimmy!
Yeah.
Andrew James! Chloe's like, yeah, you know, she starts talking about the movie and all this stuff. And Clark's like, oh, man, I never really got into comic books. Yeah, it's like, so your boyfriend and you broke up and now you're like throwing yourself into this superhero movie thing.
She
I'm like, well, actually,
distract her time.
I guess we can all relate to that. It's
another meta comment where Tom's not that interested in comics?
Yeah, I know, right?
Guess they never really got into comic books. Like, they really lean into that. Like Lex is like, you're the last person I expect to have your nose in a comic. Like, that is Rosenbaum talking to Welling in that scene, right? But then Chloe goes on this whole thing about like, dating is overrated. And I like how Clark just ignores this entirely. He's like, Chloe, you come here every day talking this way. And I'm that's not, just get over it. But she does mention in this back and forth they have, that they gave her plenty of time to work on Kara's secret identity.
Yep.
So now we'll have a reason and explanation of why people don't immediately flag her as not being from here. And then, of course, they have Clark say, like, well, when she clears her head and comes home, we'll put that to good use. Which is like, we are five episodes in to season seven. They are already just removing her from the show. So Joey, you know, season seven is like the season of Supergirl, but barely. What are your thoughts on Kara? She's not in this episode, but here's your chance. Talk about Kara on Smallville.
I did enjoy it, I think, the first time around. I mean, honestly, now having, you know, seen, you know, Supergirl the show, it kind of deserves her own spot. Not necessarily telling Clark how much stronger she is than him on a regular basis, but I enjoyed it the first time around. You know, the way Laura Vandervoort has really embraced the fandom really makes me think fondly of it. I don't think I revisit season 7 as often. I enjoyed her in her role.
Yeah. No, I did too. And having met her in real life since the show came out and getting a bump in from her, and, you know, now I guess I'm biased now, but, like, you know, I really do like her as Supergirl. And I just find it, now I was 100% against her being on the show. But I'm like, that's not getting you a Supergirl for Superman, right? But then when she was there, I'm like, I thought they did, when she was around, they did a good job with her, but they could just never keep her around. Hence this episode where they have to be like, oh yeah, she'll, you know, she's just clearing her head. She'll be back at some point. We only have Laura for 13 episodes, so we can't. She's got the Erica Durance contract this season. So anyway, so we'll wrap back around to that when Lex and not Mercy Graves mention it later. Mm-hmm. But Rachel Davenport shows up. Rachel Davenport. Lance, let's discuss.
Yes, Christina Milian. How awesome! I completely forgot that she was in this episode. It's like, this whole thing is just so funny to me, because you could tell that, like, again, you could tell that the cast was excited for her to be on the set, similar to how the cast was excited that Bow Wow was on the set when he was on his episode. They play it off better in this episode than they did with the Bow Wow one, but the excitement is still there. She's also really excited to see, it seems like, to be in this episode. I don't know if that was just like her character or that's how she always is, but you could tell that she was having a good time. At least that's what it came across to me on this particular rewatch. She was a rising star at this point. By the time this episode had aired, she'd already dated Nick Cannon for a while, and that was a thing. She'd done a movie with him, My Love Don't Cost a Thing, which is not one of her songs. It was J-Lo's song, but anyway, that's another thing. And then also, she is famous for also being, like, you know, of course, a singer and, you know, an aspiring actress. But, you know, probably her most played song and her probably most recognized song is the theme song to Kim Possible. Call me, beat me, if you want to reach me.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I have had many a Kim Possible ice cream bar in my time, but I did not know that she did the theme song. You guys know exactly what I'm talking about.
I do. She's in several straight-to-Netflix Christmas movies.
Really?
She has not made it to the Hallmark circuit yet, but... Oh, we gonna talk about Hallmark in this episode, y'all.
Oh boy.
Oh yeah. You have no idea what's coming.
Really. I can guess, but I'm looking forward to finding out. Now, should they have used a Christina Milian song?
Yes, they probably should have.
Because the only song they use is Dirty Little Rockstar by The Cult, and it's when she starts driving the car and the brakes are... I was gonna pretend! I was gonna pretend the brakes are...
Exactly.
It's a blue car and everything, right? But she does show up, and again, Chloe, the way she is, mentions that she's not just a star, she's a whole constellation. I'm like, okay, we get it.
And the other thing I thought of, because, like, her name in this is Rachel, right?
Rachel!
In addition to that, what I was thinking of is this has a lot of Bodyguard vibes to it, with Whitney Houston and Kevin Costner. And Whitney Houston's character in that, her name is Rachel.
So this inspired them to cast Jonathan Kent in Man of Steel. Kevin Costner.
It's all connected.
You know, they're remaking that now, I saw.
I saw that.
Hopefully as a movie and not a TV show, because I see so many, like, it's just from the other day, like, I found out that Field of Dreams is going to be a TV show.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, but that's a movie.
Yeah.
Like, anyway.
Yeah.
But hey, TV shows now, what are they, like, 8 episodes that are 45 minutes each?
Yeah.
Right? So maybe it'll work.
So essentially it is a movie just broken up.
It's a movie broken in 6 parts, maybe an epilogue.
Yeah, less. Something like that.
Yeah, that's the way movies are meant to be experienced.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Kevin Costner, the Bodyguard, that's interesting. She'd be perfect in, like, a Bodyguard. If they're going to cast Christina Milian.
I agree.
Oh, it's fantastic. So she drives off. Oh, we have the director says action. So episode title, set episode. Plus one.
Yep.
I knew it would be at some point in this episode. I knew we'd get one.
Had to be.
So they call cut. The car won't stop. And Clark's like, is this how it's supposed to happen? And then he just super speeds on down the road just in time to see the car flip over. And it's, you know, it's a pretty good save.
It looked pretty cool.
2007, I'm sure, it looked cooler.
Yeah.
But you know what? You know what looks better than? It's better than Clark catching that car.
Yeah.
That Alicia was in. Like, that shot still annoys me. And I think that 3 years later, they finally got a little better CGI on that car. But she's like, well, you just totally saved my life.
Yeah.
So
that's when they could have played one of her songs, right? Like, maybe perhaps When You Look at Me or Whatever You Want. You could put that in there later. Or Gonna Tell Everybody. That would have been a good one to
use. Gonna Tell Everybody. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Or even the Kim Possible theme song with him being right there, right when she needed
exactly. it. Exactly. Yeah.
So many missed opportunities here.
Exactly.
Like, where's the R.E.M.? Where's the Bow Wow? Where is leaning into the tie-in? Mm-hmm. Right. But anyway, so what is she... You guys explain to me, what does she think happened here? How does she think Clark saved her?
He was just walking through the fields, probably, you know, putting in a new fence post somewhere.
Yeah. Because, you know, she's her own constellation, so she probably had no idea he was even there or that's his farm, right?
Like, oh, that's a very good point.
Yeah. Very, just not in the moment, just... Not thinking too hard on it.
So we cut to the opening credits. We come back, and it's very similar to these episodes where he saves someone. Well, it made me think of Perry, where Perry's like clearly saw that he has superpowers, mm-hmm. and it's like that's going to be the plot. But her, no. Like, I guess she was thrown out of the car and had no concept of it. But anyway, that hook doesn't exist. Like, there's not. Oh my god, this movie star knows Clark has his superpowers now. They just sidestep that entirely. So then we come back, and as you said, Joey, he's doing farm chores. I love it when the practical stuff, when he's like just shoving the post into the ground and all that kind of stuff. Then Lana comes out, and she's like, "Oh, there's better ways to burn calories." What is she talking about? I don't know.
I think we know.
We're gonna move on. I think we do know, but they can't do that for a couple more episodes.
That's right. Because anyway, I'm waking up,
I'm feeling in my bones. So, and to carry on that theme, this is where my mind went there. He's like, "I didn't hear you come home last night." Yep. And then Lana's like, "Oh, you look so cute when you were asleep when I got back from Nell's bull."
That
is bull. Yep. Drink, dropping Nell continuity, try to cover up your lies.
That's when they could have used another one of Christina's songs. Instead of looking ass, they could have said lion ass, because that's what Lana's doing right there.
So she pulls out this newspaper, right? And I got to give him credit, right? This was not a stock photo of Tom Welling. Like, this was not, I was like, oh, but I couldn't immediately identify it as, like, oh, it's from the season 2 promo shoot. Like, this is like some random picture they just took of Tom on the set. And it's, again, this makes me think of, why did they not mention at some point, hey, now that we work at the Daily Planet, Lois, Clark, Chloe, whoever, we can erase all the archives that have Clark Kent's picture in it on the frickin' front page of the Daily Planet without glasses on, right? Because Linda Lake's got some stuff, and, you know, all these people should know what Clark Kent and Superman look like, so.
Yeah.
But we'll take a screenshot of that and share it. And Lana's like, "Wow, you think with headlines like this, I would have figured it out by now?" I'm like, "Yeah,
yeah, you would think.
Yeah, you really should have." But Clark's like, "Oh, you know, you don't think about things you don't think are real or some you know nonsense."
Yeah,
Lionel explained it much better in Exodus. What's that love has been stripped away? Guess who's back this week, Lionel? I'm so excited. Right. Okay, he's got his hand in the bear trap. It's finally here. So this PA shows up at the farm. He's like, "Oh, yes. You're Clark Kent? Rachel Davenport, why don't you on set?" And so I'm sure this guy will come in and play later.
Uh-huh.
He shows up on set at the Talon. They're shooting the scene, plus one for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket. Because what else would you wear to go see a movie star? It's kind of cool to see them shooting at the Talon. Like, I think that's pretty cool.
They got
to
make use of that set somehow, right? So they got to find
I guess they wouldn't have been there otherwise.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was... really interesting. I was kind of looking through the companion just to see if they just kind of backed a few cameras up and that's the actual, you know, set and crew all kind of working there. And it actually seemed like they actually had to stage all of that because their actual crew is in an area that no longer looks like the set. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, I think it's pretty interesting. They do talk about in the companion how they're like, "Well, we didn't just want to like shoot like ourselves," you know, and so that would be because you think about it, you have to have two regardless, you know. So, but yeah, that is like, it feels like you're like behind the scenes on the set of Smallville with Tom Welling, right? Because you're walking around and it's like that's how it would be, right? But anyway, what's the deal with Rachel here? Is she trying to like seduce Clark this whole episode or what?
Of course she is. She likes him. This also reminds me of the Criminal Minds episode with, and here's another like example of hashtag it's all connected, where Amber Heard basically plays this same type of role. She kind of falls for Reed because Reed saves her when on set someplace. It's the same type of deal. When he talks to her about transference and all this other stuff, it's an old episode, but that's exactly kind of what's happening right here.
I would have thought they could have rolled with this further if it wasn't like a season where Clark and Lana were just like together, like, for real, you know? Like, that would have been a little more fun if it wasn't like, well, clearly nothing's going to happen here.
Yes.
Because Clark is, you know, he has everything he's ever wanted. He's never going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a couple instances in this episode. Is the show being self-aware? I don't know. I feel like this episode, I feel like it is because he's like, I'm surprised you're not in a hospital.
Yes. I know, right?
So good. And okay, she's like, no, I did a couple years on a medical show. You know, I don't want to do that. And Clark doesn't, again, Clark is Tom Welling, doesn't know anything about pop culture or anything what's going on. She's like, you don't watch, he's like, I don't watch a lot of TV.
Yep.
Like, so good.
I took that a little bit, I could be just making that up myself, as a Superman reference. You know, I was just at home reading Dickens.
Oh, there maybe so. Very good. She finds that refreshing and, like, you know, fascinating that he's not like, oh my God, you're the, it's like the episode of Family Guy. Right, mm-hmm. Where Lois went to college with Gene Simmons,
yeah,
and Peter's like, "You are gods,"
uh-huh.
And he's like, "Yeah, whatever, dude."
Yeah,
but anyway, oh, Gene, how you doing? Anyway, what the mean of an IHOP or something,
yeah, something like that?
It's so funny, and she doesn't know anything about their songs.
And
so,
have a very good time.
So Chloe comes in and kind of like ruins this moment that shouldn't be happening. And I also remember Chloe mentioned earlier, like, man, it'd be great to get an interview with her, but she doesn't do public interviews. I'm like, what is she? Was she Tom Welling now in season 7? You're not doing public interviews? So they mentioned this about like Chloe getting an interview and kind of like, because Grant Gabriel has turned Lois and Chloe against each other. Very progressive show. Slice of the Daily Planet. And Chloe's like, man, maybe if I could get an interview with her, get me back in the graces of the new editor, who I hate Grant Gabriel, by the way, every episode. I'm like, you were just an awful character.
Yeah.
Like just you're not interesting. You're annoying. Like you're like a little kid playing dress up. I'm a big tough boss. Anyway, we'll get there. Well, he is only like 16 if he's Julian Luther, spoilers. But anyway. So I guess she gets the interview because Davenport's like, hey, you know what? I usually don't do that, but for a friend of Clark's, no problem. Like, oh, that's cool. And I kind of wanted to see that story, that subplot, but then it goes nowhere.
Yeah, I know.
If only we had time to see Chloe at the Daily Planet again this episode. Oh, wait, we do. And we still don't follow up on that.
It's true.
But all that to say, the next scene is at the Daily Planet with Grant Gabriel. He's like, Lane! It's just like, who are you, man? Like, he's acting like he's Perry White and you're not. And you're like 30 years too young to be acting this way around, you know, I just, what you guys take on Grant Gabriel?
Yeah, I don't like him. Like all I wrote in my notes was Grant Gabriel, ! Laugh my ass off. That's all I wrote.
Yeah. It's hard not to watch now without the Julian baggage as well. Like just knowing like, it just doesn't make any sense how he got in the position he's in and has a lifetime's worth of, and he's one of those people too. I feel like they didn't know what they wanted to do with him right away.
This feels like an Adam Knight where they're like, well, I don't know. I guess we could do some stuff. Oh, we can't. Well, let's just do something really weird.
I think he was just a new boss and a love interest for Lois early on. And they had no Julian Luther thoughts early on. That's my thought.
I'm
surprised
right.
He turned out to be Martian Manhunter, to be honest. That's what I thought he was going to turn out to be. But anyway, I have a stake in this world. It's time I started fighting for it. But anyway, I hate this because it goes nowhere. It's like whenever I list off, like, oh yeah, Lois dated this guy and this guy and this guy, I always forget him.
Yeah.
Because he's just such a blip on the radar.
Yeah, he's
such a waste of time. And he's like here for like half the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then they try to make him super important. And then immediately, just when he got interesting, they immediately kill him off.
Yeah.
Much like Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, the Ultimate Edition. But anyway. Lois finds out that a Luther got some land by Reeves Dam, right?
Yeah.
And Gabriel's like, hey, stay away from this. Although, hey, take note, news media, you can't write stories without facts. So that is one kernel of truth that Grant Gabriel shared with us this episode. Lois is going to investigate anyway, because that's what she does. So, all credit, right? We're giving Lois Lane things to do.
Yeah.
That brings us to this bizarre subplot.
Amazing.
Straight out of Misery, which is the Kathy Bates movie. Anyone knows that? So this is not an episode. This episode is not a movie plaza episode, I wouldn't say. Would y'all? I mean, there's pieces, but...
I mean, there's pieces.
We'll decide at the end.
Yeah.
We'll decide at the end. I leave it to the guests. But this is... I always remember that. This is just so bizarre. It's fantastic. John Glover has been off doing a play or something, I guess. And now he's back, and we find him with his hand in a bear trap in a cabin in the middle of the woods.
I was so excited because, you know, it's just one of those things that if you mention, you know, best Lionel Luther moments out there, this is one of them. And I just, as soon as I, you know, saw that it was this specific episode that it happened in, I was just ecstatic. I don't know why I just laugh every time I see it.
Because it's so absurd. Like, that's why you laugh.
They couldn't have had handcuffs. Like, he couldn't have slipped out.
Or his foot in the trap, like, you know, like Saw or something like that. But, like, his hand? It's so random and it's so absurd. And it's just also, at the same time, just so perfect for this show.
Yeah. I mean, this is where Lana Kills comes from.
Yes.
Okay. Like, she doesn't kill any of these people, but she very well could have killed Lionel with that shovel.
Yes. Yeah.
And I thought, I you know, didn't remember a lot. I thought, does she kill Marilyn or whatever her name is?
Yeah, I mean, that death's on her hands.
Yeah. What if that really was supposed to be Aunt Nell helping her out?
I know, right?
That would have been fantastic.
It's like, give that character something interesting to do.
She's actually visiting Aunt Nell.
What does Lionel say? He's like, why haven't you taken me to a hospital, Marilyn?
Yeah.
So we have another self-aware, like, these people know they should be in hospitals, right? And then, you know, he looks at him, he's like, what the hell is this? I'm like, yes, that's what we're all thinking. Uh-huh. It's just so good to have John Glover back. He's been gone for 4 episodes, and he's the MVP of the show. So, yeah. And then Marilyn calls who?
We don't know.
I don't know who it is. I guess if I were Lionel, like he does later, I'd probably think it was Lex.
Yeah.
Why did you do this, Lex?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. How much time has passed, by the way? Are we in real time? Been like 6 weeks since the season 6 finale or something?
Maybe.
Because Smallville, they were so inconsistent. They're like, it's like 3 months later, or it's like the next week. It's like, well, they didn't have to go back to school. They just, you know.
It was
sure.
Yeah.
That's why Dark Thursday is in May.
Yeah.
And that's why the timeline of season 6 makes no sense with these Phantom Zone people when it's like after Thanksgiving, like, yeah, I better get on that. Yeah, but anyway.
Oh, man. Oh, Dark Thursday.
Now, there's a couple of deleted scenes of this episode. The first is when Rachel Davenport and her posse show up at the Kent Farm. Right? Mm-hmm. It's actually a good conversation between Clark and Rachel there. She's like, there's movie star me and there's real me. And real me is really scared right now, but we need movie star me. It's like the duality with Clark. I thought that was pretty good. And then the ends on a line like, do you have some place we could be alone? I'm like, ooh. But that leads to the rehearsal scene of them later. So
yeah. That
would have clearly gone right before this scene and then cut to them rehearsing. And then it looks, it's like they're playing with the fact that maybe she saw him use powers.
Yes.
So
absolutely. Because it starts off like her talking about, like, you know, how Clark, I should say, with quotes, you know, has a secret and she's getting close to finding out the secret. Then pans away a little bit and you see that Clark is reading lines and he's being super awkward and clumsy about it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun seeing Tom really just like, I love seeing actors pretending that they're like, oh, I don't know how to do this acting thing and, you know, stumbling around their lines and all that.
Yeah. Tom just watched some season 1 episodes of himself. I'm just kidding.
I didn't want to make the joke.
He's come a long way. Like, seriously, though, Tom Welling has come. He became a really great actor over the course of this show. The first year or so. But how do you play 15-year-old when you're 25, right?
Yeah, it's hard.
give the guy a break. So it gets all awkward because, like, Rachel's like throwing herself at him.
Yeah, right?
It's like, okay. And then Lana shows up and he's like, Lana, like, oh, I know. My God. Like, at least they played off and it's not like, it's not what it looks like. But how many times have people come up there and Clark's been with whoever else?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good place for these sorts of things.
That is true.
Because it's a very open space where anyone can walk in. Actually, you know what? I say they played it off pretty well. Hypnotic season 5. This is exactly what happened to Lana. She goes up there and Clark's making out with Samoan. Like, that would be a trigger.
Yeah.
For her to see that, right? Which started her downward spiral to having near-death experiences and being a drug addict to see her dead parents because you thought Clark didn't love her. So anyway, but hey, it's no big deal. Just fun. Just having some fun in this episode. But well, Lana says that Chloe found a clue.
Yeah, because she mentioned when she came in at the Talon, somebody had cut the brake line, so they wanted her to die.
That's right. That's the other reason Chloe was there.
Yeah, the only accident was that Clark was there to save her. Of course, you know, Chloe doing some Chloe, she finds out that, like, there are some warrior angel message boards and forums and stuff, and this is where we get the interesting meta commentary on fandom coming up here.
Not all fans are enthusiastic about the film's interpretation.
Nope.
So this is, okay, on a broader scale, this is obviously about, like, Smallville and the fans, right? But on a very specific scale, let's talk about this. A very specific scale, this is about the first Spider-Man movie. Because it's... Because in the comic books, Green Goblin kills Gwen Stacy.
Yes.
But in the movie, it's Mary Jane, and she doesn't die. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what this Warrior Angel movie is doing, right?
Yes.
I don't know. Like, yeah, we have our internet wars, right? But, I think I don't feel targeted by this, right? I find it fun. Right? Like they said, like, either you love this or you're like, I feel targeted, right? I'm like, I don't know. Like, they're having some fun with this whole phenomenon they've created with this show. And mm-hmm. So I think it's a fun, they obviously had an angle for this episode. Like, they had an idea, something they want to try out, like a story, a cool concept, instead of like, well, who's Clark going to fight this week and who's going to kidnap? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I feel like those things came from this cool idea as opposed to like, well, we got to hit these same notes. What do we do? So,
yeah, no, I agree. I also think Hollywood likes doing these types of episodes where it's like actors playing actors working on stuff. I think they like doing that. I mean, you see these things, everything from like The Player with Tim Robbins or even more recently, like with the Michael Douglas Netflix show, like the Kaminsky Method, right? Or shows like Love, fill in the blank, right? Where it's like, you know, something about an actor, right? Like when they show people working on set, but the characters are people who are like all the actors on the show are playing actors and, you know, producers and stuff like that. And it's like they get to do these interesting commentaries and kind of say what they're actually thinking when they're working on these things. I think it's very interesting. And I think they enjoy doing this because it's kind of their way of saying like, hey, this is what we think, and this is one of those instances. I think
we don't even meet really these other actors. No. Right, they're just kind of
speaking of the other actors. Did you see in the companion the names they give the actors, where Warrior Angel is played by the character Tim Wellington?
Are you serious right now? That's fantastic. Tim Wellington.
And awesome. And then it says it's the movie is directed by Monty Smith, who made Convenience Stores.
Awesome.
Well, Convenience Stores. That's fantastic. Kevin Smith, Clerks, for all you who are like, why are they laughing? But Clerks 3 coming soon, apparently.
That's so good.
That's great. No, thanks for shouting that out. That's great. Oh, man. Blogs, message boards, fan forums. These are pretty extreme. Like, yeah, we know. Krypton site still exists, right? Krypton site, yep. Forums. They got to be talking about that for sure. And even the way that the Warrior Angels message boards look, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that was a direct reference to the Krypton site message
Probably,
boards.
I'm sure.
But really, I mean, what dates this show more than them looking at printouts?
Yeah.
From the forum.
from the digital wave.
It's fantastic. Looking at paper printouts.
Yeah.
I remember like my dad used to do this, like reading like Yahoo articles. I guess this is back when you paid by the minute for the internet. I'm like, well, I better print this out so I can take my time reading it instead of it's just so funny to think about that. I assume this is where the second deleted scene would have been. It's not a long scene, okay. But it's just kind of a reveal of because they mention, you know, the message boards and stuff, and then they cut to like this lair of someone. It's got Warrior Angel comics and posters and all this stuff everywhere. And then it shows like a guy posting the message board, hitting enter, and it's the PA who we've seen a few times. And it's like, that's like the reveal. And it was only like 30 seconds. I think that was a pretty cool way to, you didn't need it, but I kind of liked that build up and reveal of who the guy was. So then we cut to Lex and not Mercy Graves, as I referred to her, because this woman, I believe her name ended up being Gina. Mm. But for the most of season 7, she doesn't have a name, and everybody's like, oh, it's going to be Mercy Graves, right? Because you got to have Lex to have someone to talk to about. Is it, give them credit. Like they set this character up, and she's in it for a lot of the season, you know? And then, of course, he ends up killing her. Spoilers. One of the most hardcore Lex killing Mercy Graves was in actually Superman Doomsday, by the way, the first animated movie. I'm like, whoa, Brainiac is Lex Luthor. James Marsters did his voice in that, which blew Michael Rosenbaum's mind. The last inside, he was like, wait, what about Lex Luthor? Anyway, obviously, if they'd known about the whole Lex Test thing, they would have made Test this character, and then she would have continued on. Yeah, and that would have made a lot more organic sense. But anyway, she's getting up to speed about Kara. Mm-hmm. She's from Minnesota. She's, and is that not exactly where Clark said that the first Kara was from in Covenant?
I think so, look at that.
Perfect.
Look at you, Smallville. You would never pull something like not having a Veritas V in the window and then trying to tell me it was. You're so good at continuity. But anyway, it's referencing the profile, what the whatever the internet biography that Chloe set up for Kara, that she's the only child and she had two dogs, she was homeschooled and whatever. So they're still looking for her, right? Mm-hmm. But this leads into our Clark and Lex scene, which is a pretty cool scene, huh?
I agree. They were surprisingly cordial the entire time, and but it was good to see the interaction. Very Charles and Eric of them in this scene.
Why do you come here, Charles?
Exactly.
I think this for me is what makes it feel very reminiscent of the earlier seasons, because, you know, Clark has a problem. He's going to go see Lex, and he's also not walking in saying, what did Luther Corp do with this? And he's not really accusing him of anything.
Busting through the doors. Yeah. Lex.
I knew nothing about that project.
Yeah. I mean, he comes to him because you're the biggest Warrior Angel fan I know. And Lex is like, I haven't picked up a comic since we were friends, you know?
Yeah.
Back when you saw the world was black and white, once I saw that good and evil was gray, the comics lost their appeal, right? Mm-hmm. So it's insightful to Lex's character, right? And it is sad, right? That just shows you how like the greatest Superman fan ever can be like the greatest villain of all time, you know? Yeah. You guys are right. I'm trying to rack in my brain thinking about Warrior Angel. I don't think they've mentioned it. And that would have been 5 seasons since now. Because as someone who, lives and breathes Smallville, it's like, yeah, Warrior Angel. But no. And there's the great episode in season 9, which I like. I don't know what the common consensus is on that one, but I really like Warrior in season 9. So Clark's talking to Lex about this, obviously, and he's like, well, there's the guy in the movie and message boards. And Lex says, yours is the last news I expect to find in a comic. There you go. Again, you're Michael talking to Tom. And then, despite what Lex says about the comics, he goes to his most amazing comic display ever.
I'm so jealous of that. I'm so jealous of that. I want that so badly. I love comic book displays. I love nerd displays, and I need to step my display game up. And that one, like, I can't top that, like, ever. So
it didn't seem as nice as in Ryan, where he was very clearly like, I've got two of everything. One for
That's true.
It's because he's not the biggest fan anymore.
Yeah,
right? He sold those other ones to fund 33.1 experiments. So, and he knows immediately. What's the quote? It's like solitude, hero must be alone kind of thing, right? And like, oh yeah, issue 5.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, in the comic book world, when you're destined to save mankind, you're destined to be alone.
Boom, I'm talking to you, Clark. So, and this is, he tells this whole story, but it's like number 5 is a really early issue to kill off the love interest, by the way. So this is pretty, Warrior Angel's a hardcore comic book.
Fantasy comics.
Fight one of the greatest villains in the fantasy comic universe, Villicus, gets the upper hand. It's one of my favorites. I'm like, of course it's one of his favorites. But he shoots the girlfriend? What kind of supervillain plot is this?
It's dark, is what it
is. Yeah. I guess if there was some elaborate death trap, it wouldn't be... Actually, it would be easier. Like, this is what they told it. Take the gun out of it, right? Mm-hmm. I guess they needed the bullet save from Clark, right? PA to see it. But it's like, if it's like some crazy pendulum trap or something, and it's supposed to be rubber, but it's like metal and it's really going to cut her in half, that would have made more sense than like, here's a loaded gun, right?
They had to have the bullet catch, right? And then they also had to have the comic book proof that he proves later, right?
For me, the thing I kept jumping back to is like, what is his end goal here? Does he hope that whatever death he makes happen, that the writers are like, well, she's dead, so I guess we just got to say that she died in the movie and like just hope they roll with the footage of her dying? Like
that is exactly what I was thinking too. Like, as if I really do enjoy this episode, but that's kind of a plot hole of like, what is your end game? But I guess he's crazy. That's your end game. But like, they're not going to change the movie. Well, maybe his thought is they'll just cancel the movie. Because there's so much of a, that would have such a cloud over it, right? If that happened.
Yeah. But the thing is, this exact thing, what he planned to do, happened in real life with the Crow and Brandon Lee.
Unintentionally. Mm-hmm. No, you're right. And they had, they'd filmed enough of the movie where they were able to still piece it all together. And they used kind of stunt doubles and very early kind of like face replacement stuff back then. But yeah, Brandon Lee, the son of Bruce Lee, tragically died on the set of The Crow because he got shot with a real gun and they thought it was blanks and all that. And that's tragic,
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I guess enough to, God, that was like 15 years before this episode came out. But still, like, that's another reason why I wouldn't do the gun thing, because I'm like, I immediately think of The Crow and I'm like, that makes me uncomfortable. So, but anyway, this all plays out, right? Clark is now just hanging around the set to kind of like keep an eye on her, right? And, the PA hands the loaded gun over to the Davilicus guy.
Yeah.
And then, this is a really cool combination of all the superpowers, right? Because, Clark, he uses his X-ray vision and then zooms in with it and then super speeds in and stops the bullet. And I love this save where, like, the PA. Yeah, the PA is, like, hiding in the behind the fence or something, right? Trying to, like, oh, man, I'm going to see it, right? And the scene plays off as normal because Clark speeds in, gets the bullet, but we don't see it, right? That's what's so cool to me.
Yeah, it's kind of like, in when Lana finds out his secret and we can see it from her perspective, like especially like his super speed, that shows you how fast Clark is, right? And how fast Superman is. Like, we're not going to be able to see any of that, right? And this is just another example of that. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. For me, one of the things that jumped out to me is like, if I'm that guy who planted that gun, I'm not sitting behind that, watch it through the cracks. I'm on my way. I'm out of town. Think there's any way that that is not going to work out.
Like, well, who gave you the gun? Joey over here, whatever his name. I don't know. What the guy's name. I'm going to look at the companion. What's this guy's
name? His name, this is a good time to get into it. His name on the show is Ben, but he's played by Christopher Jackott, right? And he was Larry on Eureka during that entire run.
With Dr. Hamilton. Eureka.
Yeah, he was Larry Enrico. But he is in three of my favorite Hallmark movies.
You know, when you mentioned Hallmark, I was like, it's this guy, isn't it? What are they, Lance? Go ahead, okay, take us away.
He's in Ring by Spring with my girl Rachel Boston and Kirby Morrow. Rest in peace, Kirby Morrow. He's also in Catch a Christmas Star with Shannon Elizabeth.
You know what? I love Shannon Elizabeth. And also, that is a great title for one of these movies. Right? Catch a Christmas Star. Yep.
I highly recommend it. And he's also in When Sparks Fly. Do you know who whose romantic lead was in When Sparks Fly?
Is it a Smallville thing, or?
It is not a Smallville thing. This is a worldwide thing.
Melissa Joan Hart.
No.
Oh. I don't know.
The Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle.
What?
Yeah.
What year did this come out?
I can't remember when.
Well, I didn't know she was making Hallmark movies. Now I do know.
Yeah.
That she was in season two of Fringe. She was like in the first couple of episodes.
She is.
And they were going to try to like make her a main character, and they quickly were like, eh, never mind. But like, yeah. I'm like, it's Meghan Markle.
Yep.
She's in Fringe, and now she's in Hallmark movies.
Yeah, she's in several.
She would have been a great on Smallville around this time as well, by the way. Agree. She could have played Rachel Davenport.
She could have easily played. Could you imagine if she was Rachel, if it turned out that she was the one instead of Christina Milian?
Oh like, my gosh.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, I mean, she was on Fringe in 2000. That's got to be like 2009 or 10. Smallville could have got her. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
that's fantastic. I'm glad you got your Hallmark out of your system for this.
Yes.
So then Clark, you know, if he hadn't just admired himself saving the day and shown the bullet in his hand, he would have been fine.
Yeah.
Right? But then he does that in the alley. But I guess we had to see that too, because some viewers would be like, what happened? I don't understand. Mm-hmm. You know. So then we see that, and then he speeds off, and then the guy's like, nice catch. Superhero. I don't know. I'm picking up what they're putting down in this in this episode. So it's great stuff. So then, my friends, we have Lois Lane doing Lois Lane things. You can count on one hand how many times this has happened so far in the show. But this is fantastic.
Yeah, is this one of the first ones of her really sneaking around and actually for a story for the Daily Planet?
Well, I mean, for the Daily Planet, yes, for sure, obviously. Yeah. I mean, she was looking for Kara's spaceship with her video camera a couple episodes ago. But like going into like this is a plus one for Lois's costume closet, by the way, because this is fantastic. Because I love
her ID. Sadie Blodgett.
Now that's so good. That is a name from the comic books, apparently. Susie Blodgett is from an issue of Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane from 1959. So that is a deep cut by Carolyn Dry. She says, quote, I know my Lois. So she says in the companion. Does she though? Because I gotta say it. Lois and Christ on Infinite Earths. Smallville, you made a funny. What? Has she ever talked that way?
Don't know.
I only call her out.
Maybe she's a fan of Ninja Turtles and Master Splinter.
I made another funny. I only call her out because she literally says here in print, in black and white, I know my Lois. And I think Erica Durance was underserved in the 15 seconds she had on screen in Christ on Infinite Earths. As much as I love that scene, you guys heard me defend it. That is a weak part. So it's like,
fair enough.
Who talks that way? But anyway. But this is fantastic because you got Lois in her, like, you know, wearing what she would wear to work in the Daily Planet. I'm sure they reused this costume for the flash forward in Salvation in season 9.
Probably.
Also, the glasses. Lois Lane should never wear glasses, by the way.
She looks great, though.
Oh, glasses are great. I'm just saying Lois Lane. Okay. If Lois Lane is not going to know Clark isn't Superman, Lois Lane should not be wearing glasses.
No, I right? feel you. I feel
That's
you.
Not a problem in the Smallville universe because, you know, she's there before Superman, right?
Yeah.
But Kate Bosler should not be wearing glasses and not know that Brandon Routh is Superman. Okay, that's my point there. But but this name tag, in addition to the name, it is a season 4 promo shot of Erica Durance with glasses drawn onto it.
That's awesome.
It's fantastic. Lex comes in. He's like, "Where'd you get this?" So it's cool because and hey, we know it's not Lionel's office because we finally see a name tag outside being Lex's. So, anyway, this is a great scene between them.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The way Lex walked in and said, "Where did you get this?" It really seemed like there was going to be something more to that. He was just so interested in where she got the badge.
Yeah, now Erica Durance talks about this scene in The Companion. She says, quote, "They brought in a couple of little story arcs this season where I go undercover. And what I love is, because I'm not in every episode, but whether I am or I'm not on screen, Lois is always just continuing to work on her main focus at the Daily Planet, namely, going after Lex. They keep that going throughout the whole season, which was really fun. This is the first time she's alluded to going after him and the first time she decides, I'll dress up and go undercover. And that's what reporting is, right? I thought it was just really fun and it was so great to work with Michael Rosenbaum." True, because, you know, I can count on one hand the number of scenes Lex and Lois have together on this show. And then Carolyn Dries goes on to say, quote, "I love the shot of Lois walking into Lex's office, totally calm and collected. We see her in this cool Prada suit and she just walks right in and goes to his computer. You know, she's nervous and she just does it. Anytime we can get different characters to cross paths is great. We don't see Lois and Lex together that much. So anytime we can get interactions like that, it works to our advantage." So I read those to just, again, point out what I've always been talking about. Like, why are these characters not interact? Why do you have Lex and Lois interact on your Smallville show? And that's where the whole, like, Chloe is Lois and Lois is Chloe, but they can't, they exist in the same space still on the show. And Lex has all the dealings with her. That's where the problem is. Like, if I want them both to be reporters, but clearly the show has a problem with one of them being in the main, like, Uncure, right? The whole podcast we talk about, you know what? This plot would have worked better if it was Lois undercover acting like a meteor freak and gets caught up with the, like, eternal love thing. And then, like, and it's kind of referencing Clark and Lois in the future, even though that stuff does annoy me sometimes. She would have been a better fit, right? Like, I'm going to go undercover and get to the bottom of this instead of Chloe actually being a meteor freak, which I hate that entire plot line. So anyway, all that to say, it's a real fun scene between them. And throughout all this, Lex tells her, like, I spent my entire life, you know, fighting the paparazzi and the media about bad headline puns and all that kind of thing. So it's true. Like, you know, how many the Lex people love using that in a pun, right?
Yeah.
But through all this, Lois ends up revealing to Lex this whole plot of land that got bought by someone who had buying rights for Luther Corp. LL. I wonder who it could be, Joey.
You know, it was either Lex Luthor, Lionel Luthor. Oh, Lana Luthor.
Yeah.
With your dad gone, there's only one Luthor I know. Oh, there's another one. There is another Yoda. So anyway, speaking of Lex's dad, he looks down at his bear trap because Marilyn is like tending this weed garden or something. I don't.
That's the first thing I thought it was.
Are they in the Pacific Northwest and she has a pot farm?
I mean, it wouldn't shock me if she did.
So she's distracted over there with her plants. And so Lionel, this is hardcore Lionel, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he pulls his hand out of a bear trap. And that is, again, like, this is what we always joke about Lionel in a bear trap. Like, this is fantastic. It's hardcore and it's hilarious and it's awesome. So,
yep.
This also shows me that this guy, and he grew up in Suicide Slums, right? He's hardcore. So I believe this guy could do this. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So he's not like, it's like when people underestimate Bruce Wayne and all that stuff, like, oh, you're just some, you know, soft, you know, pretty rich boy. Like, no, Lionel Luthor has been through some stuff.
That's
and
right.
He's hardcore. And that's why, in my headcanon, in season 10, when he goes through the mirror box, right, and he comes to our Earth, he switched places with our Lionel, and he's in that coffin, and he digs his way up Kill Bill style, because he's hardcore.
Ooh, okay.
Because that Lionel is even more hardcore than our Lionel. I'm not the Lionel you knew.
Yeah.
So file that away for season 10. We'll get there.
Okay.
Y'all say that because Lance is here stealing your catchphrase.
Right. It's all good.
I'm not stealing it if I'm saying it right in front of your face. So
fair enough.
Very smart, right? So he throws this glass to get her attention. And then she's like, Marilyn's like, careful, Lionel, we're not all millionaires. Mm-hmm. That was just such a funny one. like they put thought into these people's dynamics. I thought it was really fun. And then he's like, you're right, I should have thanked you. And she's like, oh, well, you know, I do get lonely out here. So boom, it's with the bear trap. It's so incredible.
For real, what a moment.
I'm just so curious what the end game was with that as well. Also, like, I mean, I don't know how much they get. Would they just holding on to him just for fun to torture him specifically? Like, I just, it didn't really make sense why they had him just sitting around waiting.
Well, that's why I want to know how much time has passed. Because has he been in like a coma? Like, or just, he's been chained to this bed for how, no, I mean, a month? Six weeks? With like barely any water, you know? So, I don't know. I don't know what her plan, Lana doesn't know this evil
plan. Well, she's got those therapeutic plants on the side to take care of. That's what,
she's CBD. That's how he's getting better. It makes so much sense. Oh, man. So, anyway. We cut to Tom Welling in real life trying to get anywhere because he gets home and people are like, Clark Kent, right now they get like cameras in front of him and all this stuff and they want to interview him and all this thing. And he can barely get through all the paparazzi to get home. And Rachel Davenport has turned the living room into a masseuse parlor, huh?
Yes. And I'm sure, you know, Clark was, he's been very good about acting awkward around around this other beautiful woman that is invading his space, which I find hilarious. That's when he discovers that Ben left him a message.
Yeah, and this is where I was like, oh, is this where she's going to try to seduce him? Because she's like, can you get my robe over there? It's just where he tells the masseuse to leave. I'm like, oh my gosh. But when he does get that robe, what does he get? An envelope with his name on it, right?
Yep.
It says Clark Kent, and he pulls it out, and it's an issue of Warrior Angel.
Uh-huh. Action Comics number one cover to it.
Oh, what, is that the one with the Warrior Angel equivalent of that with the car? Yeah.
Yeah.
The note on it says, and we'll take a screenshot of this, I saw what you did. It's your job to save the world. Save it. And Clark's like, we're leaving now. The crazy fans have found me. They want me to put on Superman costume. I'm not going to do it. So where else do they go but to Oliver Queen's loft? We'll get there in a minute. But we see Lionel running through the woods, Oliver Queen style, trying to catch that boat, that last boat to the mainland from Leon Yu. And then he gets hit in the face with a shovel by Lana. It's just, we're laughing at this, and it's ridiculous, but I am enjoying the hell out of it. Like,
yes.
And then she's just like, what the hell, Marilyn?
I don't pay you to do this.
And I would have sworn she was going to kill. I was like, oh, we're going to get a lot of kills here, but she doesn't kill Marilyn. Mm-hmm. But don't worry, Marilyn gets a very cathartic death at the end of the episode. Brutal. Marilyn's like, oh my God, Lana, I'm glad you're here. Like, so it's established that they know each other and Lana set this whole thing up. And then she gets a call from Clark. She's like, oh, hi, I'm just watching movies with Nell. You're such a liar. So again, Clark got his Lana blinders on and she's doing some shady stuff on the side, so to say the least.
Yeah, working behind the scenes.
So then Clark goes to Chloe, and I'm going to count this as a Chloe's unseen connection plus one because there was a collector who sells Warrior Angel comics, and so she's able to pull up a database or something.
Yeah, it sounded like she was just like, "Oh, I'm going to look up where the last time this issue was sold," and I'm like, "That's not. I don't know about you guys, but I've
not how this works.
My comic book store doesn't take a tally every time they sell something, and you know the personal records of who they sold it to.
I certainly hope not.
I did not. It was so fast how she was able to be like, "Oh, this issue, here he is."
Much like Lois when she was on Lex's computer, like, I'm so good at this. Like, okay.
Yeah, sure, that was pretty good. That was really funny. I love Lois saying that.
That reminds me of that, just how easy these characters got through that. But you know where you bought it? Cosmic Comics. Mm. So again, throwing out these names, that's why are there not real comic stores called that? Like, if there were a Cosmic comic somewhere, I would told to go there. So Lance, we got up. Look it up on the map and ruin a road trip to Cosmic Comics if there's one there.
Fair enough.
We're going to ask, show us your Warrior Angel collection. And they'll be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I know. Get out of here, losers.
I'm really surprised they never tried to sell any, you know, side Warrior Angel comics.
Right? It's like, that's, I mean, so we would have bought them.
Of course.
Well, what they should have done when they did the season 11, right? Like, with those side stories they did, they could have done some Warrior Angel. So I, like, we know what a few of these are, you know, so just base them off the covers. And I think that would have been really cool. That's just, if Smallville came out today, slam dunk time material, but it was just, it was before its time of that kind of thing. Right. So
yeah,
you don't want to do Chloe Chronicles anymore. All that. Give us some animated Warrior Angel adventures. So, we get the address of the person who bought something at the comic book store, which is just a complete breach of security.
Mm-hmm.
Clark shows up at the PA's place. And I really like it. It is like Superman talking to a crazy supervillain fan. Because his face pops up on the screen and he's like, Warrior Angel was all I had. He gave me hope. I'm like, all right, there it is again. Mm-hmm. Hope. It's just the Superman hope thing again. But I love deadpan. Like Clark says, Warrior Angel wouldn't try to kill someone.
Yes.
He's like, yeah, exactly. So he's trying to reason with this crazy guy. Mm-hmm. But he's like, I got to push you to your destiny and all this stuff. By the way, behind Clark in this scene, they have a Metropolis Comic-Con poster that looks just like San Diego Comic-Con. It's got like the border with the black and the yellow. So that's a really cool prop decoration there, I thought.
Yeah.
So this is the warning to Clark that what he's going to do, right? But then we have Lex showing up at the cabin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Based off what Lois had found out. I guess Lex took that and figured out where he was. And he saves Lionel, right? And then while he's trying to, Lionel's like, why did you do this, Lex? And the back and forth alliance with their lines is so telling, right?
Yeah, because you know, when Lex shows up, he's like, I'll never give up on you. And that's when I was just like, well, that's ironic, considering what happens at the end of the season.
And then when Lionel tells him that, he's like, well, I see you've given up on me.
So. Uh-huh.
But then, you know, Marilyn shows up, and then, by God, a death for this woman.
It's brutal.
Has there been a more visceral death on Smallville yet, right?
I'll still give it to Tina.
Just impaled through the chest and blood out of her mouth.
Yep.
Take care of Lana. So, but it's very cathartic for Lionel, right? Because he's just beating the hell out of. Even Lex is like, Dad.
Yeah, he doesn't try too hard to stop him at all.
Well, they kind of have they kind of share a look after her, and they kind of have an understanding, huh?
Yeah. I mean, that also kind of begs the question too of how long was he there, that how much frustration of being there was he taking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's just getting like weeks, you know, like this is his captor and he's getting taken out on her, getting his revenge, right? So
yeah,
man, like that was pretty awesome. So I don't think Lana was paying her enough for a fate like that, but
no, I don't think so.
But as I said, where do Clark and Rachel go with Lana? To Oliver's loft. It's decorated for the 4th of July again for some reason.
Uh-huh.
It's again, they keep the set around when he's gone. The character comes back, the set is gone. It's been changed into the Ace of Clubs. So,
yep.
But Rachel apologizes to Lana, right? For her, like, kind of trying to come on to Clark. And I like that kind of redeemed that to me with her character because, like, come on, right? So I thought that was a very important moment to have for that character.
Yeah, and then she, and of course, you know, she has something very interesting to say. She's like, you know, like, you're the only person that's in his universe. I've seen love like that only once. And then Lana was like, oh, what happened? And she's like, the director yelled cut. And I was like, damn.
That was a great line. But then Ben, the PA, comes in. He pulls out his Batman Returns taser. Uh-huh. And do tasers all look like this?
Apparently.
That was wild.
So the DC universe.
Yes, the DC. So he tases Rachel and then he tases Lana to kind of knock her out for a bit. Is it a knockout to keep Clark's secret for Rachel? Because is this the building that he drops her off of? Okay.
Yeah, this is a knockout to keep Clark's secret away from Rachel because Lana obviously already knows.
Right. So he tased her a little longer, I guess, because Lana is not knocked out. It would have been easier if he just tased Lana and then dropped her off the building.
Yeah.
But if he's a fan of comic books, he wants this theatrical cool deal. Mm-hmm. Has to give her his whole mission statement before he kills her.
Right? Yes, a monologue, yeah.
But Clark, you know, he goes back to Chloe to try to figure out their next move, and Clark's like, yeah, like he wants me to like save the world and stuff. And Chloe's like, he didn't think that organic farming was a close second. And then Clark's like, what do you mean? She's like, do you want my editorial on that or do you want to move on? I'm like, I want to hear Chloe's editorial. Like, that's the fan saying, like, no, like you need to move on. We were in the college dropout years, right? You need to move on from this, right?
But that's when he figures out, though, that
what's the one thing that could push you to be here? Right.
Yep, it's Lana.
So Ben, the PA, he tells Lana up there before he pushes her off the building, like, Clark has to face his destiny alone, and you're standing in the way. I'm like, okay, that's the Smallville fans at this point, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I kind of had a theory on what they're getting at here. I think maybe they were starting to think down the, you know, ending up with the, not with who you're supposed to, going Arrow style with it. Specifically where, I mean, the whole point of the episode is Warrior Angel's going to do things differently than the comics were, and maybe they're like, you know what, we're going to keep Clark and Lana together. I think that maybe they were kind of setting up that something along that lines, or leaving the possibility open.
So what you're saying is thank God for Street Fighter The Rise of Chun-Li, am I right? Yeah. So Lance, you know, they did this on your show. What are your thoughts?
They're complicated. They're complicated because on the one hand, you know, for my show, they went with the chemistry that was there and what was working. And in this case, with Smallville's case, they went with them as long as they possibly could before they were like, all right, now we have to do the actual end game thing and sell that. Like, again, like, I applaud them for trying something different, taking a risk, right? Things that we hear all the time, and for going with what the chemistry, what, you know, what established chemistry was working. But at the same time, though, if you look at every other piece of the literature for the character of the Green Arrow in particular.
Every other piece?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
You know, obviously not, you know, Smallville withstanding, but you know what I mean, though, right? It's just like Oliver and a Black Canary for the most part. And ironically, it's the two CW shows that don't do that.
There you go. The two most mainstream, well-known versions of the Green Arrow. People are like, oh yeah, the blind IT girl, of course.
Yeah. So again, of two minds of the thing, it's very complicated feelings on it.
No, Joey, I am concerned that maybe they started to think that way at this time. They're like, well, people really like them as a couple, and you know, and but then you have Lois there as well. Like, I don't.
But then in the same episode, you know, Lana's doing, you know, unforgivable things in terms of, in Clark, you know, if Clark knew what was going on at the moment.
I hope we don't share these lies to Clark, but yeah. Anyway, God's sake. There's a quote from Alan Miles. I don't know which, and I don't know when. But they said, the greatest tragedy of Smallville is that Clark doesn't end up with Lana. I'm like, okay. Maybe if you told me that in the first half of season one, I'd be on board with you, but there's so much other things that qualify for that more. So I think that was always a must. You know, like, look at how they did the series finale, right? I haven't talked about the series finale in a while. All right, I gotta spoil it for y'all.
Okay.
They erase Lex's memory. They make Clark the bumbling reporter, right? They do all these things like to line up with the comics for no reason. They didn't have to do that, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I want to think for this, they would have eventually broken up Clark and Lana. If Kristen Kirk doesn't leave the show, I don't know how that happens.
It's true.
Right? Because they clearly couldn't, like, do it organically.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, Joey. I feel like they were like, okay, well, we'll put this. Let's see. Let's put this out there. Yeah, let's see. But also, you're absolutely right. She's like a supervillain in this episode. Yeah. So there's your problem. But for now, right? Clark doesn't know that. So we'll see. But this is an epic save for Clark, right? She gets dropped off the building, and then we see him jump off the building, and it's a great Superman kind of like look, right? He's got his arms together. He has to be flying here, right? Because this physics doesn't work this way. If he jumped off the building after her, he wouldn't be able to catch her.
If he is not flying in any way, she's Gwen Stacy. Like, it doesn't. Maybe he could have still, you know, been without Lana at the end of that if he wasn't flying.
That's true. And also, thank God that nobody in Metropolis was like outside at this point to see this.
He lands on a car. He's like Dark Knight. Lands on a car. It's the same thing as Dark Knight and Rachel came out a year before, by the
exactly.
way.
But
it's
the
like
thing
Chris
is,
Nolan.
Yeah, but the difference is people saw that, though. There were people around, like, you know, taking
someone in the car.
Stuff.
Yeah. No, I thought the same thing. Like, you're in front of Oliver Queen's loft. Clearly, I'm sure it's in a swanky part of town. Nobody saw that.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty cool save. You know, I do like it. And there's some, we're in Metropolis, right? We're doing Metropolis thing, so that's really cool. Do we want the whole Green Goblin Riddler thing? Where he's got two people and he drops both of them. Maybe that would have been.
Yeah.
I guess they did that in Dichotic, actually. Jonathan Taylor Thomas did that already with Lana and Chloe. So we have done this, a form of it before, I guess. But we'll take a screenshot of this next article because I really want to read it. Lois's article about how a missing CEO found alive, right? And then our favorite new character, Grant Gabriel, says, this is crap. Told you to stay away from the Luthers, right? And she's like, oh, is it because you care about me? It's like, no, it's because he's Julian Luther and he doesn't want you digging into their
into his
problem.
Yeah, they did have it planned out.
Yeah, maybe they, you know what? Maybe they did. They start having this back and forth and I don't like it. And it's like, yeah, none of these forced, like, hey, Lois has got to date this guy now to kill some time because Clark's going to be with Lana forever, as we established in this episode. And it turns into like this weird conversation about like, oh, you're annoying me, but you can be making up to me. You're going to come with me to this thing. And she's like, is this a date? And he's like, no, that'd be crazy. I'm your boss. You know what? Forget it. You're fired from your invitation. She's like, oh, yeah, well, I would have been, yeah, you would have been my eye candy or something. They established that they like each other here.
Yes.
And it's not cute and it's not Hallmark and I don't like it. So
it was just weird. It was just kind of a weird exchange. You know, you can tell, yeah, they're trying to put in some chemistry that really wasn't working out, I don't think. And it was just all a bad idea, everything with him.
And if I'm not mistaken, when he dies, there's no reaction from Lois. Like, she never even finds out.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, hey, what happened to my boss/boyfriend? No? Okay. Yeah.
So, I don't care.
You know, and you're just miscast, too. You know, like I have never seen Michael Cassidy in anything else but this. BVS. You know, he's really good in that one scene or two scenes in BVS, I think, you know? But here, it's like a Wildcat situation, Lance on Arrow. Like, I don't buy what you're presenting to me with this character, and he doesn't have the chemistry with people he's supposed to, and I don't like him, and I don't like what he's doing in the Daily Film. Like, I just don't, it's a fail across the board. So anyway, but it is a callback. I mean, to think of the Julian Luther thing, it's like somebody went back and watched Stray season one. We're like, what can we do with these things in season seven? Because that's, we meet Warrior Angel, and we meet the concept of Julian Luther then.
There you go.
So then Lionel goes to visit Lana at the loft. He's like, oh, Lex told me you were here. I see you're wasting no time. Go back to your old life. Back to your roots. Right? And she's like, yeah, I heard you were kidnapped by a crazy woman. He's like, oh, indeed I was. You. Yep. Like, yes.
So good.
You have been missed, John Glover. So
she's like, I would never do that. And she's like, oh, please. Like, that line stopped working for you when you faked your own death. I was like, yes.
He is back. Lionel is back, and he is throwing his weight around. And she's doing her best to like be like, oh, well, I'm sure Clark would be very glad you've recovered. And I'm like, stop. You know, and Lionel sees right through it. And I really like it, too. He's like, just let him go, Lana. You know, you probably told yourself you're doing this to save Clark, but you've done some bad stuff, and you just got to let it go. So I like it. I like him confronting her about this. So.
I do, too.
Yeah, he's just all of us at this point. Just like, go away.
What's the deal with, why does he not tell Clark, like, hey, your girlfriend kidnapped me and put me in a bear trap?
Because he knows that Clark has blinders on and won't believe him. Even, like, regardless of what, like, of, you know, where he is with Lionel at the moment, like, he knows he's not going to believe him if he's talking anything negative about Lana.
I thought Lana was going to drop a Martha card on him, but.
And I feel like, too, Clark is also always quick to, you know, get defensive with Lionel as well. You know, he's always ready to, you know, turn.
I never should have trusted you. I was killed him in the season six finales.
Yeah.
Why she ran under one, and then he would have freaking punched his head off. So, hey, we go to Belle Reve, and I totally forgot about this scene.
I did
and
too.
This, to me, this scene almost makes the episode, you know?
Yeah.
Because this scene is so good, right? So we have this, because you think the show was like, you fans are horrible. You're the worst people in the world. Get a life. So, not that this guy should, you know, be redeemed or anything, because he wanted to kill an actress because it didn't line up with a comic book. I mean, come on, right?
Yeah.
But it turns it around, right? Because Lex Luthor shows up, and hey, continuity. There's a blood stain on that comic book that Ryan bled on when he had his tumor.
Yep.
I'm like, now they probably just had the prop left over. No one knew it was like that. But
like, what happened to this one?
They're like, I don't know. It's the only one we have. We got to use it. Okay, sure. They literally don't know why it's a stain. That's fantastic. So Lex brings in this, you know, all these rare issues of Warrior Angel. He's like, oh my God, it's so great. Huh? And Lex is like, yeah, you know, I thought you might like these. When they brought you in here, right, you were screaming about, you saw a man of superpowers. And you know, he wants to know about it, right? He quotes Deviliquus, so he connects with the guy, right?
Yeah, he's like, I've been known to believe in something even when people say that I'm wrong.
It's like Deviliquus, issue 15, or whatever, right? But that is really Lex Luthor, right? And so when Lex presents him, like, hey, you can have this stuff and be my friend if you tell me about this guy with superpowers, and the dude, he like realizes, like, he knows comic books.
Yes.
And he knows a supervillain when he sees
when
one.
When he sees one, yeah.
And he's like, nothing to tell. I was crazy. And he goes and he sits back down. I was like, that is so good. Like, that really elevates, like, this, they're walking that fine line, you know, of like making fun of the fans and being with the fans. And I think this scene really brings it all together like that. Cause I really like that about this guy. Even he knows, like, Clark's a hero and I can't, you know, give his identity away to this evil guy, right? So
yeah, he protects the secret. But it's, and I do think it's funny though that we don't get to see Ben apprehended. The last time we see him is when he's pushed out of the way, but like not really.
Yeah, would a Clark call the cops?
I guess so.
I really thought it was gonna be a little Jim Carrey "I'm Batman" moment.
Yeah,
because I'm like, surely they had to wrap up something with him, you know? But yeah. Smallville's really bad about that, because I was like, man, are we even gonna see him again? Is Chloe gonna say, well, they just carted him off the Bell Reve, crazy, who would have, you know? I thought it, yeah, like, oh, they write him off. But this scene was fantastic, and once again, Lex so close to finding out the secret. Mm-hmm. but this guy, you know, won't give up the secret. So good on you, Ben. Yeah, you did some good after all in this world. So
well done, Ben.
So then we get to a missed opportunity for a lion, where, yes, Rachel Davenport says, go ahead, take it away.
She should have said and sang, "Somebody save me." Come on. Come on.
But maybe they thought they were going so meta, they didn't want to cross that line, I guess. Yeah. But she says, "Help somebody." I'm like, that's so close.
Yeah.
Because Clark, you know, he's doing his farm work, as Ben was very disappointed in, as we all are. Right. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Hey, I'll be back for the sequel." And then Clark later is like, "I hope she was kidding about that." I mean, she was, because she does not return.
Yes.
She ran into her in like season 10. And she's like a big actress. And hey, yeah, Clark, what are you wearing glasses now for?
Uh-huh.
She tells Lana to hold on to him. Always hold on to Smallville. Yep. Right. So that's good stuff. And then, you know, Lana doesn't, and then when she drives off and she gives him a gift, right? We're gonna wait and see what that gift is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Lana and him have a, you know, Lana's trying to have an honest conversation, but she's also like doing horrible things on the side. So
yeah.
And it's come out of her conversation with Lionel. If he hadn't had that conversation, she would never say this. But she's like, yeah, so you know, War Angel gave people hope. Maybe you can give people hope. Maybe I'm holding it back, you know? Maybe you can inspire millions of people. And Clark's like, well, there's not even a million people in Smallville. Mm-hmm. So that was a good comeback. And again, this scene, again, it kind of showed me how they're walking that, again, that fine line of, you know, assessment, self-assessment, and justification of why he doesn't go be Superman now. He's like, I have right here, right, on this farm with you, everything I ever wanted. I'm like, okay, well, then that explains Christ on different earths, right? Just, obviously, it's Lois instead of Lana, but
it is.
He's just, as long as he's got a family on a farm, this Clark is happy. So
yeah.
So then they open this box, right? And it's one of these like Smallville moments. Like Lana walks off, right? Because I guess it's Superman stuff. And that plays into the theme, right? Of the episode. Like she has to not be around when the Superman things are. And it's this cape. And I guess he gives Martha this cape when she makes his costume, because it's got this cape, not the terrible fruit roll up cape of Superman Returns.
Mm-hmm.
Because she puts an S on the back. So good on you, Martha. She, you know, she's a big yellow S on the back fan. So am I. Thank you, Martha Kent. But this scene, right? Let's talk about this. People use this as like, yeah, what an awesome Superman moment. It's actually, no, that you're misreading the scene. The scene is Clark rejecting his destiny, because he pulls out the cape, puts it on the, you know, the fence, and then walks back inside with Lana. So that's how I've always seen it. What about you guys?
What if Rachel drove back up 5 seconds later? She's like, he just left the cape. I mean, it's a cool shot, though, of him, you know, of him walking away with it and the flying in the breeze. It is kind of cool. And I love the music choices with the very end of the episode too, where it's a
slowly becoming the blur theme, right?
Yeah.
But that's how I've always, I wonder what the show thought it meant.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, did they think that was like symbolic of him walking? They probably think, oh, cool, the cape. Like, it's like, actually, I don't know.
It's like a video game. You know, we've got the cape. We're going to put it in our inventory. We'll see if we need it later.
That's right. So I always find it funny, because I guess, just speaking of online, as this episode does, right, forums, I'm like, I guess the vibe of that is like, what an awesome Superman moment. But I've always kind of read it like it's actually the reverse. So anyway, but it's cool to see him holding a red cape, right?
Yeah, it is.
And his blue shirt. Oh, my God.
It all makes sense.
When he was saving Lana on the side of the building, the at first when he was kind of pointed down, the red jacket really did kind of have a little bit of a cape look. So that was pretty cool.
That was pretty good. That's why he wears it in every episode until Jimmy Olsen takes a picture of him. And then he's like, I better switch this up. So,
Lex Luthor, what are you doing here?
I thought you might enjoy this. Here. These are the rarest War Angel comics ever. They're worth a fortune.
Why are you giving me this?
Because I've been known to believe in something after the whole world tells me I'm wrong.
Davilicus, he said that exact line to the president in issue
175. Ben, they dragged you in here kicking and screaming because you claim you saw a man with superpowers swipe a bullet out of thin air. I'm here to listen.
There's nothing to say. It was all in my head.
Action got an 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1 out of 5. So Neil not picking up what they're putting down. I mean, do you even like the show? Well, he doesn't anymore. It's very clear. So, yeah, not a fan of Action. But, Joy, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Action?
You know, I think I'd have to lock it in at an A-, and really just the minus coming in on just remembering that, you know, you've got Greg Gabriel, you've got you've got Lana doing really shady things on the side. I would have slammed the entire B plot, but the bear trap really, I think, elevates the entire thing.
And absolutely,
an absolutely memorable Smallville moment, yes. An all timer. So I'd lock it in at an A-.
All right, what about you, Lance?
That's a solid A for me. I mean, great guest star. I mean, Christina Milian does a great job in this, I think. And she doesn't detract from anything. It's not distracting that she's in the episode. She doesn't subtract from the episode at all. She adds to it.
She's the anti-Bow Wow.
Yeah. In that regard, yes, she is. And, you know, the iconic bear trap thing. You have the meta commentary. You have the return of Warrior Angel. This is a great episode.
Yeah, I'm right there with y'all. I'm going to give it a solid A as well, because this just had this, like, it gave me that old school Smallville feeling, you know. Even though we had some nonsense, like you said, with Grant Gabriel, so that was the weaker point, but it just they did meta and they did it really well. I think on a show that usually they fail at that a lot when they're trying to be cute with their lines and all that, you know, like if they have an episode like this every now and then and just stop with all those like Clark Kent leaps tall theories in a single bound and
yeah,
I see when a uniform like tone that down. Do a couple more like this, and like you can kind of this would feel even more fresh than it already does, right? But yeah, no, it was delightful, you know. I mean, all their self awareness and they walked that fine line, and really they brought it home with that last scene between the villain of the week and Lex. So, and then again, leaning into their own mythology with like Warrior Angel, that's a unique Smallville thing, you know. So like in 50 years from now, when there's a 100-year anniversary of Superman or something, right? They'll be like, Smallville contributed Chloe Sullivan, Lionel Luthor, and the Meteor Shower and Warrior Angel. Right? I mean, that really should be on the list. I think it's fantastic. So, because you always wonder, like, are there not superheroes in these universes? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you guys? And they answer that question. So, and they do it in a really satisfying way. So, all right. So, A for me, A for Lance, and A- for Joey. Let's go down the tally board. I have a +1 for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket. That brings us to 63. We have a +1 for Chloe's Unseen Connections. That brings us to 28. We have a +1 for episode title 7 episode. That brings us to 54. We have a +1 for Knockouts to Keep Clark's Secret. That brings us to 45. We have a +1 for Lois's Costume Closet. That brings us to 5. And last question goes to you guys. Movie plot is an episode. I leave it to the guests.
I'd say no. There was nothing really that jumped out for across the board. You know, there's bits and pieces, but I'd say no.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to say no as well. I mean, there are elements, and you can make an argument, you know, with the elements there, but it's not a strict one-to-one like others have been.
All right, very good. Bechdel test fail because Lana and Rachel just talk about Clark.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a fail there.
Bechdel test? Could you go with Lana and Marilyn? It's about
Lana. Oh my god, you're right.
Yeah. Ooh.
How did I forget? Thank you for reminding me of that. If we didn't get that amazing scene of God bless John Glover's stunt double getting hit in the face by that shovel, there you go. Bechdel test pass.
That's
well
so
done,
funny.
Smallville. Fantastic.
That's so funny.
All right. Well, it's been a lot of fun talking about Action with you guys this week. Joey, if people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter @JoeyD94_13.
All right. What about you, Lance?
You can find me at Sir Lance Laster on all of my social medias. You can also find me on the Nerd Party doing Training Montage, a sports movie podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party or on thenerdparty.com. And you can also find me over on the United Federation of Podcasts talking about all the things that make Arrow Arrow on Always Hold On to Arrow. And you can find us on Twitter at Do Not Fail Our Pod.
All right. You know, we're in season 7. You guys are in season 4. So it's fun times for us both.
Yeah, absolutely.
Arguably the worst seasons of both of our shows. I mean, Joey, do you have any thoughts on that? You think these are the worst two seasons of these respective shows, Smallville and Arrow?
Arrow, yes.
Okay, I was about to say for us.
Yeah, no, Smallville, even though you were just through it, the overall bad taste left in the mouth of season 6. Like, the overall, what it does with the story, just, I'm not a fan of. There are gems in there, but the overall course of that season plot.
That's fair. Although, season 6 does not retconly insult my intelligence by telling me there was a Veritas window there the entire time, so
that's fair.
That gives it the edge. And it has more Green Arrow. So, which, by the way, I hope you guys are keeping track of our Veritas photo album. Yep. Every episode, we see the Veritas window where there's no Veritas in it. We'll be posting a picture from each episode. We, of course, saw it in this episode. Anytime we're in the Luther Mansion, we'll see it. I'm very much looking forward to when that actually shows up. Because you know what? I would be more forgiving of that if it's season 7 started and it was there. But clearly, it's like Grant Gabriel. I'm like, did you really just not know what to do with this guy?
Yes.
Just, you know. Oh, man. But there you have it. Well, we'll be back next week talking about Lara. Lara! To quote one of Smallville's best episodes.
Yeah.
But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Darren Kirscht, Joy Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ Duena, Nathan Rothatcher, Casey Cochran, Nathan McKenzie, Jason Skipper, Steve Rogers, Joe Mickendo, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, John Curcio, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Thomas Navin, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Zachary Burkhalter, Mark Itzvapen, Alex Ramsey, Jason Davis, Patrick Bravo, Patricia Carrillo, Jacob Stevenart, Diana Bias, Corey Moore, James Bandini II, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clonk Kant, Becca Zeifel, Jacob, Mariana Sachi, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Goso, Erica Flynn, Jared Gibbs, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine McGelly, Keith Falls, and Lauren D. Thank you so much to all these patrons. You too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
The last episode, I was watching them all running up, and the Dean Cain episode where, I was like, God, Allison, you kind of had people in a similar position a few times.
You know, I thought about that, but I just didn't mention. I'm like,
yeah.
Of course I thought it immediately.
My wife said the same thing when she walked by when I was watching. It was...
I was like, I cannot... I would love to, like, go in on that, but I was like, nah, just gonna let it be. But it was very, like, oh, God.